All right, guys, welcome to Popcorn with Candy, the podcast where we break down the films of John Candy in chronological order. I'm Octopus Caveman.
I'm Peter.
And welcome to the show. This is a very special episode of the show. Unlike the Different Strokes very special episode, this is not going to be creepy. Today we're talking to Tracy Morgan, who's working on the wonderful biography of John Candy called Searching for Candy.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me on. Why was the other episode creepy? It might turn out to be creepy. You don't know that much about me.
Did you ever see the Different Strokes very special episode with the bicycle repairman?
No, I'm going to have to go and look it up now, right?
Oh, don't. It's so bad. So, Tracy, we can find you on Twitter at Tracy Mixed Bag.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And you've also got a wonderful blog, searchingforcandy.blogspot.com.
Thank you.
And you've got an Indiegogo campaign to support that biography.
Yeah, basically, when I first started writing the book, I didn't really know what to expect in terms of publishers or anything like that. Later on, after I'd managed to get support behind me and interview a lot of people, a lot of the UK publishers, at the very least, were basically saying, look, he was just too nice a guy. People won't be interested. You can find us some scandal, you know, then we'll take it. And I was like, hell no, you know, it's I'm not writing this to make money. I'm writing this because I'm a fan of John Candy's, and you'd be really hard pushed to find any scandal. You know, there's you know, every comedian has a dark side. We know that. That's why they're comedians. You know, they kind of live with that side of themselves and poke fun at it. But that's every comedian. And with John, he's 99% light. You know, you're not going to find anything. So they wanted me to make stuff up or dig into things that really didn't need to be dug into because they're not that big a deal. And no, so I decided to self-publish. But I really wanted a hard copy, and to have a hard copy, you need money, right? So I set up an Indiegogo to try and fund that side of things.
I've thought about that when thinking about John Candy. You sort of think about these people you like in your head. And I thought, like, what would the John Candy movie be like? Just a guy just killing it on the screen and just being a super nice guy off screen. And he indulged his whimsy. I don't see – there's not that drug dark side or anything like that. He just seemed to be – just a sweet, wonderful guy.
Yeah, and he was. I'm not saying that he never did drugs in his early days when he went to Chicago and trained with Second City. He met Bill Murray, and Bill Murray pretty much introduced him to everything. But certainly he wasn't a druggie or anything like that. You know, he didn't have affairs. He loved his family. And he was just super nice to everybody. He was just brought up to be a really nice, good Catholic boy. I think he struggled with his Catholicism a bit because he was born guilty, because most Catholics are, right? But yeah, he was just a really nice guy, and he treated people how he wanted to be treated. I mean, more fool you if you hurt anyone who was close to him, you know, but you know, that's like any of us, right? We protect the ones we love, so.
Well, and hats off to you for pursuing just a wholly positive endeavor with this. I found... In our endeavor, just doing this podcast, that it just seems to be wholly positive, and John Candy fans seem to be really positive people. And
yeah,
you know, I constantly see on Twitter just people tweeting just a simple line, "I miss John Candy," and it's like
yeah,
we all love that guy. Those of us that grew up with him, and it just seems to be so positive. There's not that underlying darkness.
No, and there's not many actors, I think, that you can watch and really feel like you relate to again and again. I mean, everyone feels like they've got an Uncle Buck, or, you know, that they were friends with John Candy, right? So, you know, it's I think he's just so human that we could all relate to him. And he always rooted for the underdog. And I guess that, you know, just showed that sort of caring side of him. And really, if you look at the John Candy films, I mean, when I started writing the book, everyone laughed at me and said, "What on earth are you doing? Never going to get anywhere. No one's going to speak to you. You know, it's just a dream, really." But if you look at most of the John Candy films, dreams come true. Cool Runnings, that's a, you know, perfect example. And I just like the fact that everyone's worth something in his films, and that's how he treated people. And I think his fans really like that element to him.
So how did you come to decide to write a biography on John Candy? What was your experience with that?
Always loved John. I think you guys were fans when you were kids, right? Yeah. And you kind of grew up with his movies. And it was actually my older brother who introduced me to John through Brewster's Millions and The Great Outdoors. And he used to watch those films religiously. And of course, then as soon as I started watching it, I was hooked as well. And later on in life, I sort of really struggled with depression, and I had a really bad bout of depression where I went back and I visited things from my childhood just to sort of take me back to a happy place, really. And John Candy was probably one of the biggest parts that I revisited. And I think if you haven't seen a John Candy film for a while, you don't forget that how great he is, but you forget just how great he is. You know, he's even better than you imagine him to be when you go back and revisit things. And just started reading about him, wanted to know more. And I bought the book called Laughing on the Outside by Martin Neilman. Have you read it?
I got like 3 pages in. It's really hard to get through. He sent me some excerpts, and I just was, I'm not reading this. This thing is just frustrating. There was a line in there where he mentions like he never truly got a chance to shine, and I was like, who are you talking about?
I know. I know, it's crazy. Crazy. And as he went on, he would put the odd line in where he'd insult John, or he'd sort of, you know, have a bit of a dig at him about his weight. And I was like, well, that's not fair, right? People just aren't, you know, the physical shape, and so what? Who cares? You know, it's about the work and about the person he was. And maybe he just didn't interview the right people. Maybe people didn't want to speak to him and he got the wrong impression. Or maybe his publisher said, look, you've got to make it a bit darker because we're not going to publish it unless this happens. But for me, it just wasn't what I wanted. It didn't feel to me like what I thought John Candy would be about. So I had to go and explore that for myself, really. And luckily, I found it was completely different. So.
It felt like a guy who hated John Candy writing a biography about him.
And it's hard because I've obviously people I've interviewed who didn't speak to Martin Neilman have spoken to me, so I know bits that I can't really say. But I don't think him and John were big friends either, you know. And he was really a film critic, and film critics could be quite cruel to John at times. So it's hard. I'm sure he has a genuine love for John somewhere in there. I just didn't necessarily see it, you know.
Right.
But I didn't think that could be the only book that was out there, and it is. So we need to have another one, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what kept you going throughout all those people telling you you're crazy?
I think my first interview that I got was a guy called Jonathan O'Mara, and he went to school with John Candy. And he was so supportive and so nice, and like, I really feel like he's a dear friend now. He sort of supported me over the years, and anytime I've had a downtime, he's just gone, you can do this, and you know, you've got this, you've got the right heart and the right attitude to go for it. Okay, so carry on. And with every interview, everyone goes, I'm really pleased you're doing this, there needs to be another one. I just hope I'm good enough. That's what it comes down to. John's good enough, but you know, I hope I am.
Well, if your blog is any way to judge, I would say so. I'm looking forward to the book. The blog has been fascinating. I love it.
Oh, really? Oh, good. Thank you.
I know people have told me I'm crazy for doing this podcast, but I always said, you know, at the end of the day, if nobody listens and I am crazy and nobody cares, I got to hang out with my brother and watch every film by an awesome actor and talk about it.
Absolutely. Like, and the thing is, though, your podcast is really good and people will listen. They'll come. You bring the podcast, they'll come. And and I just think, you know, the John Candy fans will find you. They're a lovely bunch of people, and they're so diverse in age and, you know, everything really, that they will find you, and they will love it. And I think people are enjoying it already, so it'll just build from there.
Thank you.
I hope I have the same.
Yeah, absolutely. If I have anything to say about it, for sure.
Yeah, everybody I know is going to hear about the book.
Oh, bless you. Thank you.
So, did you get an opportunity to talk to his kids at all, or?
I have been in contact with the family. I've had contact with Jen, and I've had contact with his wife Rose, and I've had contact with Chris. And very early on, I had contact with them, and they kind of said, we won't give you an interview, but you can have our best wishes, which was really, you know, best wishes with the book. So I was like, cool, at least they're not going, please don't do the book. Because at that stage, I would have had to go, okay, I can't go against his family's wishes. I have kept in contact with them, and every now and again, I'll message Rose and I'll have a question and she'll get back to me. I spoke to Chris Candy fairly recently. I showed him the artwork for the book and he loved that. And when the book is finally complete before it goes to publishing, it'll go to those guys. And I don't expect them to endorse it in any way, shape, or form, but if they can read it and go, yeah, that's okay, or you know, we don't like that bit, can you take that bit out, or anything like that. That's what I'm looking for, really. John, he's such a respectful man, you wouldn't want to disrespect his family.
How wonderful of you to offer him that. I think that's really nice. They must be delighted that finally somebody's writing a book that's not just like, I wrote a book, here it is, rather than.
I don't know. I think it's hard. I mean, obviously, to start with, they didn't know who me, you know, from anybody. I'm just a girl in the UK who's, you know, to them is trying her luck and maybe getting somewhere with interviews. And I think that's hard for them to maybe over, because I've been doing it for a few years now and I'm kind of at the end stage. Maybe they've learned to trust me. Maybe they haven't. I don't know. I hope so. I hope as well when they read the first edition, maybe there'll be a second edition. Maybe they'll get involved.
They both seem to be delightful.
Oh, yeah.
They just seem like they have that light that he had. Like, Jen just seems just she's just a chip off the block. She just seems amazing.
Yeah, he shines through her, really, doesn't he? She just looks so much like her dad and Chris. And they're so sweet as a family. I think, you know, I fingers crossed, hopefully they'll learn to trust me. We'll see.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Fingers crossed.
So, who have you interviewed that has been like your biggest score?
Well, there's been quite a few for me. They might not be big scores to everybody, but for me, certainly some of them have been. I think probably for like everybody, they would probably go, wow, Mel Brooks was one.
Wow, that's
Yeah.
awesome.
So, and he was very sweet, and he was the nicest thing about him was he was just as interested in me as I was in him, and that's not always been the case with these interviews, but the higher up you go, you tend to find that they're even nicer than you imagine them to be. So I interviewed him about Spaceballs, Carl Reiner, I interviewed about Summer Rental, Mariel Hemingway about Delirious.
One of
But
my
then there's,
favorites, by the way. I
oh,
love
really? Ah.
probably my personal favorite.
It's just so sad Tom Mankiewicz isn't around, so I can't interview him. But have you read his book? He
No.
talks about John in his book. It's good. It's like Life is a Mankiewicz. You've got to get it.
Oh
It's
yeah.
cool. Yeah. And then there's probably about 70 others, I think. As I say, there was Johnny O'Mara, who went to school with him. There was Ted Schmidt, who was an Irish priest teacher at Meal School. So that's amazing to sort of actually speak to his teacher and find out what he was like as a pupil. Martin Burke, who directed and wrote The Clown Murders. Alexandra Bastido, who's coming up, I'm sure, soon in Find the Lady. Unfortunately, she's passed away since I've interviewed her, as was happened with a couple of people. Gosh, who else? Jewel Hellmyer. Wow. For me, that was a big score purely because obviously I was a fan of SCTV and the Jewel Hellmyer dancers, and he's just lovely, just so sweet. Roald D. Lewis from Cool Runnings, who was Junior. Leon, who was, oh my God, I've forgotten his name, the lead in Cool Runnings. Oh, I'm so sorry, Leon. Not Dougie Doug. There was Leon Dereese. He played
That's right. Yeah, I don't. Dougie Doug just came.
I was educated thinking Sanka, so we're on the same boat.
Sanka, yeah.
Yeah. That egg was a rubber egg. You probably read that in my blog, right? But I was
Yes.
a bit disappointed. I thought it'd be like a hard-boiled egg or something. Rubber egg.
Dave Thomas, of course, who I read in your blog. That had to be awesome.
Who, sorry?
Dave Thomas?
Dave Thomas. Yeah, he was my first big proper one. And he was my first telephone interview, and I was terrified. And I think I was on the phone to him for about an hour and 45 minutes, and he just kept talking. And he would tell you all sorts of stories. He had a really nice story about Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, who went to watch at Second City, and they wanted to do a sketch with John and with Dave Thomas. And for them, that was huge because Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, well, you know, they were massive fans of them, and it kind of didn't really work out how they wanted it to. I think Peter and Dudley were really drunk, and rules of improv, as I believe them, you know, you kind of pass it backwards and forwards. It's like a game of tennis. So you give something to somebody, they give it you back, and you always say "and yes" or "and this," and you give the person a chance to sort of join in with what you're doing. And Dudley Moore didn't do any of that. He kind of run on stage, do a bit, run off again. And he said he was just like an annoying gnat at the end of it. You know, he just kept like zipping on. and Peter Cook went on with John Candy, and they were meant to be doing like a confessional on stage, and they talked about it beforehand, and John was the priest and Peter was doing the confessional. And when he got out there, he didn't do what they agreed they were going to do, and Peter Cook got down and started basically mimicking like he was giving John head. And John, having his hero in front of him, hadn't got a clue what to do. So, like, Dave had to think fast, run out round the side of, you know, from the front round the back and get on side stage to help John. So they kind of found that their heroes had feet of clay at that stage, I guess. But he's got amazing stories. That's one from the book, but there's more, I promise.
If I met Dudley Moore and he wasn't drunk, I'd be disappointed.
It's true. It's what you expect, I guess. I'm not sure about Peter Cook giving your head, though, right?
I don't know that I'd say no. That'd be a great story for the podcast.
Yeah, that too is true.
I have to say, do you have a difficulty in holding things back from the blog for the book?
Yeah, really hard, because every time you get a good story, being a John Candy fan, I'm not a journalist, I'm a John Candy fan, I want to tell everybody about it. And I do find that hard, and I have to get people to proof it and go, do you think that's okay? And some people say you've got to give them something, and then other people say hold stuff back. So you get bits on there, certainly you get bits, but there's a whole lot more in the book that's being held, which is really hard. That story, I wasn't going to tell anybody. You've got it now.
If something went down with me and Peter Cook, I wouldn't be able to save it for the book. I'd be tweeting that experience.
Oh, no, it's, you know, there's a lot of good stories, hopefully, that you won't have heard that will be in there. So fingers crossed for that. And the other big one for me, who was probably the biggest, was Carol Spinney, who you'd actually know as Big Bird. I interviewed Big Bird. I was like, what the hell's going on here, you know? And I don't know if you've seen it, but, you know, the Smengi brother characters, Josh Smengi. Have you seen the clip where he's with Oscar the Grouch and he's gone around to give them some clarinet lessons, yeah?
I watched that with my son recently.
Did you really? Yeah. Well, I interviewed Carol about that, basically the scene that they did, because in a bit you're going to be doing Follow That Bird, and John's in that, but not till the end. Carol didn't get to work with him on that, so that sort of part that he did on Sesame Street, Carol got to know him a little bit, and they went for dinner afterwards at a little Italian restaurant across the road and had spaghetti and meatballs and quite deep conversations. But he said it was funny, because this is another one from the book I wasn't going to tell anybody, but the wart that Josh has on his head, he would basically stick that in different places with every different take. So he would move it slightly or put it somewhere else. And one of the guys who was working on Sesame Street, who always collected like silly little bits of paraphernalia and thing, has got that wart. John Candy gave it to him.
That's awesome.
To somewhere there's John's wart.
Well, your blog answered a question for us. Peter brought me a clip of the Smengi brothers, and he went, I think John's really playing. And we sort of went back and we're like, it looks like he's really playing in Home Alone. Yeah. And then your blog put that to rest. And I was like, you gotta check this out. He's really playing. And that's sort of, it sent us down the rabbit hole with your blog.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's brilliant. Yeah, no, he learned clarinet at school. So he kind of continued that through on, I think. And yeah, he's a really good musician by all accounts. Clarinet's not my thing, but you know, he could drum and he could do different things. He loved music. So yeah, really cool.
I wanted to ask you, I know it seems like a really broad question, but everybody seems to bring up when you talk about favorite John Candy movies, either Uncle Buck or Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which I think are great. Personal favorite's Delirious.
Yeah.
Peter, do you have a personal favorite?
I'm stuck with Uncle Buck. Yeah? I love that movie.
How about you, Tracy? Personal favorite.
It's hard. It's tough, because obviously I go Planes, Trains, he was just phenomenal in. Uncle Buck, again, just, you know, perfect. It was just written for him, really. Cool Runnings. I love him in Cool Runnings. I loved him in Brewster's Millions. I loved his character, Spike, The Great Outdoors. But I really love Only the Lonely as well. And that's not like a big choice for some people. But again, Johnny O'Mara, who I interviewed in the early days, and a couple of others that knew him really well, said to me, you know, that was like his real character in real life, probably as close as you're going to get. He was shy and sweet and respectful, and that was John. I watched something recently, and I think Jen said, who's his daughter, said to her, he's always going to be Uncle Buck. And I think she'd asked her mum, Rose, who she thought he was most like, and she thought he was most like his character in The Great Outdoors. So, but as you know, as saying before, I think everybody sort of, he bleeds a little bit into every character. And that's just so wonderful about him, because he could touch you in so many ways. And play such different characters, but it would all have John in there somewhere.
I think I like Delirious because he's sort of this underdog character.
Yeah.
He gets this ability to sort of do whatever he wants and learns a lesson from that. And I don't know, it's probably a little personal thing where I just, you know, sort of relate with him in that movie.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think for Delirious was certainly for him probably one of the funnest movies to make as well. He really got on with Tom the director, and he loved Marielle Hemingway and Emma Sams, but I think it was just a general loving, even if it didn't do well at the box office. Everyone on set just had the most amazing time. And just even the extras, I interviewed Mickey Stanhope, who was an extra in the dinner scene where they all had tuxes on, and he just said it was just amazing. Everybody was just so nice to each other. Everybody bounced onto set every day, and that doesn't help, you know, happen on every film. And I just think that's something, you know, you could probably see that in the film as well, how much they loved it.
I would have never guessed that Delirious wasn't a huge box office success, because it's so amazingly written and acted, and we watched that movie on VHS growing up constantly.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we saw it in theaters, but that's probably only because we had a soap opera fan as a mom.
I believe there was another movie that came out around that time called Soap Dish or Soap Box or something like that, yeah? And that one did better. So I'm wondering whether it was just the time of release just didn't work. But, I mean, really, it had an all-star cast in lots of ways, and it should have. I believe Tom Mankiewicz had said something at some stage that might have upset somebody in Hollywood, so that might not have helped matters. But, yeah, it stands up. And so many people haven't heard of it. It's crazy.
Now, we had a difficult time talking about The Clown Murders because we're both really big fans of Martin Burke.
Yeah.
I think that Pirates of Silicon Valley is the best Steve Jobs movie. You know, and he managed to capture the Steve Jobs and Bill Gates experience in this wonderful movie. Noah Wiley was great in that. Anthony Michael Hall. Amazing movie. And then we both love Top Secret. So it was really difficult to watch his freshman film and be sort of underwhelmed by the beginning. But I think that movie had a really great second half. It was tough for us to navigate because we liked the guy, but we didn't want to dump on the movie too hard.
I think they all learned on the job, to be honest with that one. I think John was very fresh when he went, and Martin didn't know John before that. I think he was looking for somebody to play Ollie, and basically Al Waxman had said to him, look, you've got to see John Candy. Have you ever heard of him? No. But come down to Second City, and John was doing an improv set with Dan Aykroyd, and he loved John and met him then. But John was very green as well on the set of The Clown Murders, and I think they all were. I think they learned as they went along, which is probably why the second half was so much better. Yeah, so I put that down to experience, maybe.
How was the interview with Martin?
He's really nice. He's really friendly. He does a lot of documentaries and things as well. So he was kind of saying to me, look, this can't just be a book about loving John. It needs to have every angle to him. You need to have the whole 360 view. And he was telling me stories. Obviously, you know, later on, John became the co-owner of Toronto Argonauts. But he could tell me about the day that John had met Bruce McNall. I've interviewed Bruce McNall as well, so I've got his side too, which is good. And basically, they would go to these hockey games, and there would be a whole bunch of them that would jump into John's car because everybody had sports cars and John would have a big car. So he was the only car who could take everybody out to the hockey games. And the hockey games, I mean, they love the LA Kings. And he said, you know, you could sit in the stands. People at hockey matches didn't care who was there. There'd be Tom Hanks in the stands. There'd be John Candy in the stands. People were just there to watch the hockey. They weren't worried about seeing stars, which was great, you know, for them. And he said he'd get to the last period and John would always be like, oh my God, nothing's happening. They're going to lose. Let's go. I can't bear to watch it. And they go, no, John, you know, still got 18 minutes yet. Please, you know, stay. because if he goes, they have to go. He's just left home. Oh, no, I can't watch it anymore. And they would walk back to the car park and they'd get in the car and they'd turn on the radio and the game would have completely changed. And he said they'd be bitching and moaning and like four grown men in this car, just, you know, ah. And John Candy would always say that only ever happened once, but apparently it happened quite a lot of times. And it would always be John that would go, ah, it's not happening. I can't watch. Let's go. Sorry, I've gone off at a tangent. So he, Bruce McNall, basically bought the LA Kings, and one of his jobs was to look after celebrities and get them involved and get them on board to up their credibility, I guess. And he heard John Candy was out there, so him and his entourage literally pulled John Candy out of the seat, and he was introduced to John, and John was really, you know, interested in Bruce. I think Bruce was a really successful businessman until it all went wrong. And John loved sport. Sport was, you know, second to anything else, really, for him. And that was the sort of first time he met Bruce. And his life changed a bit later because of that, really. So Martin could tell me about that side of things.
My favorite John Candy sports story is the Joe Montana story at the Super Bowl, I believe. They were sort of in a huddle before a play. And Joe got distracted because he saw John Candy up in the stands and went, "Hey, isn't that John Candy?"
That's all you need. If you've got John Candy on your side, you don't really need anything else, do you?
It's just amazing to me that, you know, Joe Montana was hugely popular at that time, and for him to be distracted by, like, "Hey, look, there's John Candy," it's just, I think it just speaks to how much everybody loved him.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'm probably going off at a tangent again, but later with the Toronto Argonauts, I mean, he worked so hard, not just to promote them, but the CFL in general. And, you know, the players would go on and they'd get booed by the other side. And then John Candy would come on and you know, the opposition, they basically gave him a standing ovation. He was like a Roman emperor, you know, the whole stadium were on their feet. And just a raise of his eyebrow would just cause a round of applause, you know. And He really worked so hard to get the CFL off its feet again. And of course, with John Candy behind them that year, they won the Grey Cup. So, you know, as I say, if you've got John Candy behind you, you can pretty much do anything.
Let's hope we all do.
Yeah.
Now, how many of these early movies have you seen?
I have seen most of them. I've not seen The Silent Partner, so I'm going to have to watch that. But I've seen everything else.
How did you like Class of 44?
When I say I've seen everything else, I mean I've seen all John's parts. Is that bad?
No, that's fine.
Just fast forward to the John part and I go, okay.
That's what we recommend for that movie.
It takes a real masochist to do what we're doing.
Can I tell you a story about Class of 44? It's only a little one, but it's nice. John's first acting, proper acting role where he got paid, he did a Colgate toothpaste advert. He was an American footballer in it, and he met a guy called Jim Henshaw, who was an actor, and he writes a blog called Legion of Decency, and I've interviewed him. And on Class of 44, they both got this bit part together, and Jim Henshaw obviously was on set with him as well. And they said afterwards, the wardrobe lady was saying, you know, these clothes we're giving you, they're very expensive wardrobe period pieces, you've got to look after them. And when Jim was getting undressed afterwards, John noticed that on Jim's pants there was a sticker stitched in, and it said Francis Sinatra.
Whoa.
And he was like, oh, I know. Basically, they're trying to desperately look for any other evidence that this could have been of Frank Sinatra's you know, pants that he'd worn. And it was, they found these two ticket stubs. I can tell you the name of the place that it was for. I don't know if off by Catalina Island Yacht Club. And so they'd had two ticket stubs for two drinks, and obviously they were out of date, but they took one each just as a memento. So, you know, it just a small bit, but it's probably longer me telling you than John's actual starring in the film. So
that's true, but
we were really concerned doing that one right out of the gate.
Yeah.
The thing is, you know, it's only going to get better from here on in. It is. It's getting better from here on in. So
I feel, yeah, hopefully. We just finished Find the Lady, and that one was rough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I interviewed Alexandra Bastido was the leading lady in that, and I interviewed her. And so I didn't get the longest interview out of her, I have to be honest. And as I say, bless her now, she's passed away since then. But yeah, she didn't, I think it was all made quite quick, and I don't know. I think she was saying, was it Mickey Rooney?
Yeah.
Not Mickey Rooney. Yeah. She said everyone was quite friendly on set, but he would just take himself off. He wouldn't have anything to do with anybody, but everybody else got on okay. But yeah, it didn't feel like a movie as such, did it really? Quite disjointed. But John was good in it, right?
John was great in it, and so was Lawrence Dane. I've become a fan of Lawrence Dane doing this. You know, I was unaware of him before this, but I think he was great in The Clown Murders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it seemed like a good idea at the time. I thought maybe just a comedic Canadian actor, but then Clown Murders, I was like, whoa, Lawrence Dane, this guy can act. Yeah. And then really enjoyed him in Find the Lady, but that just suffered from some rough writing.
I think it's interesting, though, as you say, you pick up on all these other people, because learning about John, you'll learn about so many other people. It's crazy, because you're just paying so much more attention to them, really. And to learn about John, you have to learn about the people around him. So
we set up a rule that we're going to only do John Candy films, but I think we made a mistake with The Clown Murders. We're not completely sure. Was that just a direct-to-video?
I have a feeling you're probably right with that. I don't think it came out as a general release. Saying that, it's been on Netflix since, you know, so I don't know. I'd have to ask Martin. I've never really thought about that, to be honest, because it's just always been down on his IMDb. It's one on the list. You need to watch it. I never really thought about that. I'd have to ask Martin.
Right. We've been basing it all on IMDb as well. And if it doesn't have that little TV movie tag on it, we tackled it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's interesting.
I'm not complaining. That's been my favorite one so far.
Has it? See, there you go. I would just class it as, yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, came out. Yeah.
Now, if we broke the rule for any movie, because I've been considering this because The Last Polka was a TV movie.
Yeah.
If we broke it, what film would you suggest we break it for? I was sort of broken up between, if we did break it, should we do Hostage for a Day, which was the movie he directed?
Yeah.
Or maybe The Last Polka, or maybe both?
I think if you do one, you have to do both. And why not? I think you should. Last Polka would be great fun to do. And Hostage for a Day, again, it was a directing debut, really, in terms of a film. But I don't know if you know much about the backstory of that, but Bob Crane, who was his PA, he wrote that with his wife, who passed away either just before or not long after. And there's an interesting story about how they got John to do it, really, because he didn't want to do necessarily a TV movie because he was worried then he'd be seen as a TV movie star and not a film star. So they got him to direct it instead, and then he had a bit part in it. I would do both. I think you'll get great stories and great commentary from both.
Yeah, it's settled then. We'll do them both.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to ask about all of his early uncredited work. Do you know why he's uncredited in so much stuff?
I don't know. I think John just said yes to a lot of favours. I mean, he said yes to everything in the early days, certainly, because he just wanted to be part of something. So he did the good, the bad, and, you know, all the bits in between, really. And I couldn't tell you why he was uncredited in some things, but I would imagine some things would just be done as a favour, and bit parts, really small parts, maybe he didn't feel like he could ask for a credit in it, you know, maybe he should have had one, but maybe he just didn't feel like he could demand one back then, I don't know.
I had one question that's super specific, and it's about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh no, I hope I can answer it.
When I watch this movie, I have a completely different experience than other people because I don't see anything hateable about Del Griffith at all. I watch that and I think Neil is the jerk. Neil Page is a jerk from start to finish in that movie. I don't know if you had a similar experience, but my question is, who's the real jerk in that movie?
Neil, although he turns it around at the end. But yeah, he's, you know, John's character Del, what's not to love about him? I mean, okay, some people might think, you know, it'd be annoying if I sat next to that person. I would love to meet Adele Griffith, especially if I was stuck anywhere. You know, you wouldn't have anyone better to have an adventure with, really. And he's just got a huge heart. So I'm with you. I know they always say, oh, bumbling fool, Del Griffiths, and he turns around at the end and he's got a... Nah, it was Neil. Neil, just marketing executive, running the rat race and, you know, yeah. Totally agree. totally agree.
Thank you.
I do too. I just maybe wouldn't share a bathroom or a bed with him.
But if it was the real John Candy, you wouldn't care if his socks were in the sink, would you? It'd be the same as Peter Cook, right?
That is a perfect movie. And I think that was like John Hughes' streak. So I think that's why we had the overlap of The Great Outdoors, She's Having a Baby, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. But there is that weird bit where in the beginning, Kevin Bacon races Neil for a cab. And then later, yeah. She's Having a Baby is on TV. So if you kind of reason with that world, Steve Martin raced to get a cab with the real Kevin Bacon, the movie star.
I guess anything's possible in John Hughes's world. And the thing is, because he was so clever and he was so detailed with everything, maybe that's how he wanted it to be. I don't know. And the details are amazing in Planes, Trains. I mean, he wrote that in a weekend. It's crazy. Just a weekend. And they cut 4.5 hours footage from it.
Yeah.
And I interviewed Larry Hankin, who was Doobie from Doobie Saxiola, and he was telling me how they actually filmed that cab scene and they stayed and he had just a skeleton crew around and they filmed an improv with Steve and John and Larry in the cab for a whole afternoon, and John Hughes actually turned that into like a 10-minute short as well. Larry never got to see it. Apparently he spoke to Chris Columbus and he said, yes, it exists because I've seen it. I can't find it. It's probably, unfortunately, now, you know, just a ruined film somewhere, which is a huge shame. But just the fact, where's all this footage gone? I've only seen one deleted scene, and it must be amazing. They must have cut some gold out of there.
Absolutely. And, yeah. Are you talking about the made-for-TV scene, the dinner in the plane scene that they...
Yeah, how funny is that? Why would you cut that out in the first place? What else have they cut, you know?
The dinner on a plane scene is in the television run that they'll play in here in the States, but not on the DVD or theatrical release. It's a really bizarre choice.
I don't think I remember it. I'm surprised.
Oh, no, you watch it back and you'll see it. It's brilliant. But where's all the other scenes, you know? And that's my worry, is because obviously it was filmed back then. They didn't have digital equipment, so the film is probably spoiled somewhere. And just how much more could there have been? I believe originally they'd even filmed some scenes of flashbacks with Del and his wife. Yeah, so I would have loved to have seen those as well, but just it's a shame. These days everything gets documented and shared, and that's great. Back then, I guess if it didn't make the film, it was just pure luck if you got to it afterwards.
Now, Hot to Trot, I loved that movie growing up, and
yeah.
Apparently it was shelved, and the Warner Brothers just kept it in their archives, didn't release it until a few years ago. They did a Warner Archives thing, and it became available again. Have you revisited that?
Yeah, I love Hot to Trot.
Good, so it holds up, so I'm going to love it again.
Yeah, I love John Candy as a horse.
I remember loving it as a kid. It's just hard because sometimes the movies you liked aren't movies that you still like.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, they're different when you go back and revisit them. Quite a lot of that has happened to me as a kid. Never happened with the John Candy films, which is why they stand up to everybody, I guess. But yeah, Hot to Trot, John Candy as a horse is fantastic. And obviously, I can't interview John, but I would imagine, because I know he loved doing the kids' films like The Rescuers Down Under, and he loved doing that sort of animation things, that being the voice of a horse, I think he would have found that hilarious. And he was perfect at it. I think any animal that would have come into contact with John, or any friend that he rang on the phone, he would have different voices for, and he'd have different characters, and he'd make up stories and scenarios and things. So giving him a horse to be the voice of, perfect for him.
It seems, I mean, I just had a difficulty like going through my memories and thinking, was it that bad? They just shelved it? It couldn't have been that bad. So I'm looking forward to revisiting that one.
Yeah, I don't think you'll find it was that bad at all. I don't know. Who makes these decisions? Is it one person? Is it a group of five? Do people actually speak up and say that they like things, or do they go with the majority? I don't know. But yeah, for me, absolutely. It's just, I mean, it's not going to change your life or anything like that, but as an entertaining afternoon movie on a Sunday, it's perfect. So, yeah.
We just had a debate over Spaceballs.
Okay.
There's another podcast where they talk about Spaceballs not being a good movie. And
okay.
He decided,
I agree. It does not hold up for me.
And I don't agree with him at all. I think it holds up completely well. It's an absolutely wonderful movie.
I like it personally, but were you comparing it to Star Wars? This is the thing. Like, were you comparing it to the parody of, or
no,
do you just don't like it as a?
It was a movie that I constantly watched growing up, and yeah. Then there was a period where I went along a long span without revisiting it, and I decided to show it to my nephews, and the three of us sat there and didn't laugh once, and I just thought it just doesn't hold up for me. And there's funny moments in it.
Yeah, yeah.
It just didn't do it for me. I don't know what it is.
I just think there's something wrong with him.
That may be true. No.
I'll agree to that 100%.
It's not in my top five. Do you know what I mean? I like it. It's not in my top five. I wouldn't go as far as to say I don't like it, because I do. And I think John's great in it. And I think the fact that the animatronics, I interviewed the animatronics guy in it who did John's ears, called Rick Lazzarini. And I think, you know, just the way that he must have worked with John, because John's quite animated anyway, he must have really worked hard to keep up with those ears and the tail and things like that. So I guess maybe looking at it again, when I was interviewing people about it, I looked at it from a different side. I watch films to enjoy them, but when you're interviewing people, you watch films and you'll notice it when you do it this time around. You'll look for the details and things you may not have noticed last time, or think, how did they do that? And usually when you watch a film, you just watch it, but now you're analysing it, you might see it differently.
Well, it's strange because I'm usually the guy that goes super easy on movies. If I go see a movie and I have a good time, it's great in my eyes. Like, well, it was great. It was a good time. So it's really strange for me to take the stance of like, yeah, Spaceballs is just meh. But
yeah, that's all right. You've allowed one. You know.
Well, the way it's going so far, there's a lot of movies we don't like, and that's been really hard on us. The hardest
with
part.
With John Candy, or?
Well, his roles have all been great. Mm-hmm. But it's been really hard being negative about these movies, because these are great people making movies. And I keep trying to reason it that it's just the state of cinema in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm hoping that's all it is.
Yeah, you may have a point.
Yeah, because these people are great people, and I love them and all the other stuff I've seen them in. But I just feel really bad bagging on them.
I think they would probably see your point of view, though. You know, it would be interesting to sit down, and I bet there's some that they go, you shouldn't have done that. And it always makes me laugh when I watch Zombieland and Bill Murray's in it, and they've shot him, and they're saying, any regrets? And he says, Garfield, you know. And I kind of think they must all have that in them. And they probably know when it's not gone so well. But if you're gonna try and experiment and try and push yourself and do things differently, then you're gonna go into these things. And I think back then as well, everybody was friends with everybody else, so everyone would pull you in as a favour, whether you thought it was good or not, you'd do it to help them out. And you know, we'll see. What did you think about Nothing But Trouble? Have you got to there? You've not got to there yet, but you've seen it, right?
I love that movie.
Do you?
I do, and I know that's a rare thing. A lot of people hate that movie, but I think it's fantastic.
It's not something I would regularly watch, but I don't mind it when I watch it. And sometimes I just go, what were they doing there? But I don't, you know, I think it still stands up on its own. I mean, it should have. It had, you know, Chevy and Dan and John and so many people in that, Valerie Bromfield.
Taylor Negron is amazing in that.
Yeah.
And Tupac makes an appearance.
Yes, he does. And the idea behind it is great. But there's just, I don't know, it doesn't flow quite right for me, but that's okay. It doesn't have to.
I accept those criticisms of that movie, too. It's just like, I get it. You don't like it. I totally understand your points of view, but personally, I love it.
And John won a Razzie for that, for being his in drag role, so for the worst supporting actress.
Now, did he accept it?
I don't think he was there on the night, but I'm sure. I don't know.
See, that's the sign of a classy actor, accepting a Razzie.
I think he accepted it. I don't think he was there on the night, as far as I'm aware. I'll have to look into it.
Well, I think this was fantastic. I really appreciate you doing it.
I'm so sorry. I can chat for England.
So everybody, remember to check out Tracy on Twitter, at Tracy Mixed Bag. Check out her blog, searchingforcandy.blogspot.com, and go support her on Indiegogo.
Thank you.
Sorry, folks. Park's closed. The moose out front should have told you.